calling? Okay, so this kavura is about ribs. And what I didn't really have time to give kavuras this time of year because of these bars and whatnot. But what motivated me is someone recently gave me a contract review here, and it was written, the two parties were both from, the one that wrote it was an attorney, and it had mamish beferish ribis. And it really struck home to me the tremendous problem, not just here, everywhere, of ignorance of ribis. People don't understand what it is. And unfortunately, there are even people that do, but ignore the Isser altogether. And I'm talking about people that are otherwise from. They just, it's like we keep 612 mitzvahs. it's a major problem. And it's a very serious Isser. And so I wanted to talk about it. Now, my purpose tonight is not to give you Piskei Halacha, because I am not qualified to do that. What I am trying to do is scare you out of your pants enough so that if you run into these situations where there is a chashash ribis, you'll talk to someone who is qualified to address it, because the majority of the times you can accomplish what you want to, but in a heterodic way, as opposed to being over on Isser. And if there is no heterodic way, you don't want to do that either. Okay. I would like to recommend this book here, The Laws of Ribis. It's put out by Art Scroll. When you start reading it, you might think it's written by Edgar Allan Poe, but it's actually written by Rabbi Yisrael Reisman, who is a respected rug.
I saw Rabbi.
What?
I saw Rabbi.
Oh, really? Okay. So I don't necessarily agree with all of the mitziistic assertions he makes in here, you know, but it's an excellent overview of various aspects of ribis, and really shows you, it showed me a lot of transactions which never even occurred to me would be ribis, that are. There's a lot of things that are ribis derabbanan. There's ribis deraisa, ribis derabbanan. Both of them obviously are aser. There are certain kulos that apply to ribis derabbanan that don't apply to the other ones. Now, as far as the issur of ribis in general, I've seen and I've heard various reasons offered for the philosophical reasoning behind ribis. Why does the Torah ask ribis? And I can tell you from my perspective as a financial professional, none of them make sense. You know, it says there's one I saw that it says it's in order to encourage chesed, that people should loan money for free and not charge ribis. As we're going to see, in many instances, it can actually prevent the chesed from being done. For example, if I have money in a bank account that's earning interest, and I live on that, say I'm an elderly person, I have a fixed income, I can't afford to take it out of the bank unless I'm going to draw income. And you need the money, I would love to loan it to you, but I can't because I need to earn interest from the bank. So there's just one example where the issur ribis actually prevents me from doing the chesed.
Another the Torah's reason. Vision in the first place, you wouldn't be living off that income.
What?
The Torah's vision wouldn't have you living off that income.
That's not
in the
true.
First place.
And that goes to the second reason. Another reason that I've. It's not true. Another reason is because there are those that say it's the ideal economic system, which is also, I personally think, is not true, because when you have a society where credit is totally free, you can have rampant inflation. It is particularly not true where you don't have a level playing field, because ribis is only us or the Jews. It's mutter for goyim. So by its very nature, all the credit is going to be drawn to the people who are going to pay for it. Right? So the woman who has her money in the bank, in a goyish bank, we see it not necessarily has to be a goyish bank, but let's say in the bank, that she's getting interest perfectly mutter in the way that the Torah prescribed it.
You can receive ribis, you're saying. You can take ribis from the bank.
If it's a goy, you can pay or receive. Yeah. If it's not a goy, we'll hopefully get into that.
Okay.
So, why am I saying this? Not to chas v'shalom complain against the Torah, but I'm trying to impress that ribis really, at least as far as I'm concerned, is a chok. And the reason that's important is because you have to understand that if you come across a transaction where it just doesn't make any logical sense that this should be usher, it doesn't matter. It could very well be usher. You should not try to think yourself it doesn't make sense that this would be usher, because the whole ribis concept as far as I'm concerned, doesn't make sense from a human perspective. I don't know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked the rivers. But, you know, the reasons that I saw it to me don't make sense from my financial perspective. So you really have to look at it and analyze it in the light of what the halacha is, not in light of how could society manage like this. What?
Not in the light of Tamim. It's a
right. And you see how impossible it is to exist without ribbis by virtue of how many things we do try to get around it. Right? All the banks in this country are based on essentially trying to make ribbis without making ribbis. You know? That it's because it's nearly impossible. So I think it may have to do, I think the reason why it's nearly impossible today, as opposed to the Zman of Gemara, may have to do with when we switch to paper money, and money is no longer intrinsically valuable, and so that itself could breed inflation, because money has sort of an imaginary value, if you will. Okay, so now that we have that down, I'll give you a classic example of where it makes absolutely no sense, but it's mamish, and the things I'm going to say tonight, you have to double check. I'm saying it in my own understanding of halacha, but don't take it as chesak. But this, in my understanding, is mamish ribis kitzutza, ribis doraisa, and it happens all the time. Okay? Let's say Reuven comes over to Shimon, says, "Listen, Shimon, I need to borrow $10,000. Can you help me out?" So Shimon says, "You know, I really don't have the cash, but I'll tell you what, I have $10,000 available on the credit line. I'll write you a check from the credit line, and you just pay back the credit line, whatever the payments are." Mamish ribis deraisa. The reason is because what is actually happening there is two transactions. I am borrowing money from the bank through my credit line, and then I am in turn lending it to Shimon. When Shimon sends a check back to the bank, what he is in effect doing is paying me back, and then I am paying back the bank. And as soon as Shimon sends me $1 more than the $10,000 I loaned him, that is ribis. And he's going to, because you can be darn sure the bank is going to be asking me for more than the $10,000 that I drew off the credit line. That's how they make money, right?
Yeah.
Except in Israel, they make money by charging you for breathing. What was that?
Yeah,
it's a Goyish bank? No. Yes, if it's a Goyish bank, it doesn't matter. Because I'm the lender.
Isn't it like you borrow from a Goy?
Who? Who's you?
Let's say
Reuven.
Reuven. I'm Reuven. Okay? Yeah. I'm loaning you $10,000. You're Shimon. Okay? So you're borrowing from me.
You're
borrowing from me.
Why is it that the debtor borrowing from you?
Because it's my money. You didn't borrow from the bank. I'm the one that's authorized to take money from the bank.
The bank never heard of you.
That's right.
If you don't make the payments, he has to make.
Not only that, the check is coming from me. It's my name. My account is going to be charged as a result of your cashing that check. Okay? You want to say something?
No.
Okay. So that's mamish ribis deraisa, a classic example where it doesn't seem to make sense, because, again, I want to do you chesed. I can't do a chesed because it's usher. I don't have the money. But I can't do the chesed by having you do that, right? Okay, so in order to try to deal with the isser of ribis, they developed something called heterisco. And this was apparently largely because in medieval times, a primary profession of Jews was money lending. And what they would often do is they would take money from fellow Jews to invest and loan out to other people, often goyim. And there was enormous pressure to create some kind of mechanism that would allow this to go on without infringing on the Isser of Ribis, which actually is impressive because it shows how concerned they were with the Isser of Ribis in those days. But there's something you need to know, which when I found out about it, sort of shocked me. The Heter Iska is only about 500 years old. It was developed in the 1500s by the first one that was published was by Rabbi Mendel Avigdor of Krakow, who's known as the Maram. I'm not sure if it's the same Maram that we have in the back of the Gemara or not. But that was the beginning of Heter Iska. Before that, it basically did not exist. And so I'm sure that there was tremendous pressure on these rabbanim to come up with some way to do this. And it always scared me, you know, why didn't they employ something like this before, if it really works? But the truth is, it has been condoned by many poskim throughout history since then. So, you know, who are we to question that in the bona fide situations where it applies? Yes?
There are a few terms in the Gemara. Like the Gemara says, there are a few small.
I'm sorry, say it again?
There are a few small terms in the Gemara.
For Ribbis?
Yeah.
No.
Ribbis are one of them.
Ribbis Darabonin, maybe. I'm talking about Ribbis Daraisa. Okay? Ribbis Daraisa. Now that's important because I want to explain a Heter Iska. It's very important to understand this because if you don't understand what a Heter Iska is, if both parties don't understand what a Heter Iska is and they employ it anyway, it's very questionable as to whether it works. Many people are under the misconception that a Heter Iska is some kind of hetcher that matters you to loan brivis. It's not that at all. A heter iska actually entirely alters the transaction. It converts it from a loan into something else. And it's predicated on the fact that the iser ribis is an iser of paying interest. And interest you can only have if there is an underlying loan. If there's no loan, what you're getting is not interest, it's something else. For example, if I have an investment, I invest money with you, and you pay me back more than I invested, which is usually the hope, although not always the case, that's called a return on investment. There's nothing wrong with that. Yes? What is the difference between a loan and an investment? This is extremely crucial in understanding how the Heter Iska works. A loan is a transaction where you ask me for money and I give you the money on the stipulation that come what may, you're going to pay it back. So let's say you want to invest in Libyan oil. Okay? So I give you $1 million to invest. All right. I give you $1 million to invest in Libyan oil as a loan. Okay? You buy your Libyan oil, NATO comes and sinks the ship, and you're out your oil. Now, what happens to the $1 million? Sorry, Charlie, you've got to go sell whatever you own to pay me back the $1 million, because I'm not taking the risk of the Libyan ship. That was your problem. Okay? An investment is different. An investment is where I give you $1 million to buy the Libyan oil, and if the ship goes down, it's my problem. So the point it turns on is who is taking the risk of loss. Is it the quote lender or the quote borrower? If it's a loan, then when I get back more money than I gave you, that's ribis. If it's an investment, when I get more money than I gave you, that's mutter. It's not ribis.
But who's taking the risk of the loan?
Who
takes the risk?
There is a risk.
That's the question. Who's taking the risk? So if it's a loan, if it's really a loan, the one who's taking the risk is the borrower. Because he has to pay whether he loses money or not. If it's an investment and he's not really a borrower, he is really a shomer pikado, the way the Gemara views it. He's in charge of... You've given him something to be in charge of and take care of.
Yes. The Mikadon would be
the money.
The money.
Okay. The money. And he actually has a din of a Shomer Sachar. What a Heter Iska does is it says, you are not loaning me the money. Well, there's variations. It could be you're not loaning me money at all, or half of it you're not loaning me. The more common Heter Iska, I think, is where it's half. In other words, let's say I want to borrow $1,000 from you in order to invest in some windmill energy project. Okay? So, I'll tell you what. I don't have any money. You give me $50 as an investment, which I'll put into windmills, and then you loan me $50 on top of that, which I'll put in as an investment, and together we'll invest $100 and we'll split the profits. Okay? So you have $50 here as an investment, which is perfectly fine to get your money back on, and you have $50 as a loan, which is awesome for you to get any money back on other than the $50. So how do we engineer that in order to come into the current structure that we want to simulate the loans that we have? So what we do there is there are conditions built in to that risk. For example, you will tell me that you'll be willing to do that transaction, but on the $50 that I am, that now if you call it an investment, that means that you, the lender, are at risk. If the windmill doesn't work out, you're only getting back $50. Okay? So there's two parts here that we have to deal with. There's the principal that you gave me, and then there's the interest or return on investment. So what will happen here is you will tell me, or let's just turn around, it's easy for me. I will tell you, I'm the one putting in the money. Okay? I will tell you, fine. I will loan you $50 interest free. And if you lose it, you gotta pay me back anyway. And the other $50, and I will actually, there's another halacha that I have to pay you a dollar for taking care, or something for having taken care of that $50 for me. Okay? Then the other $50 is going to be an investment for me. And you have to give me half of the profits, okay? But that's not really what I want to do. What I want to do is give you $100 and make back 3% per annum, right? So what I will tell you is I will give you $50 and you give me half of the profits. But when you come to give me half of the profits, you have to supply absolute proof of what the profit was, in the form of a shvua. You have to swear to me that I only made 1% profit. However, I'm a nice guy. In lieu of that, instead of making a shvua, I will allow you to pay me 6% per annum on the $50. And we'll call it a day. Okay? So, the vast majority of people won't take that shvua. There are some cases where it actually happened. And what will actually happen is you'll end up with the same result. And what about the principal part? So what they do often in Heterisk is they say, as far as the principal is concerned, a shvua is not even enough. There, you have to bring me two kosher witnesses to prove that you were never negligent in the entire time you had my money. And only then will you be believed to say that I'm not entitled to it back. Because even if you're a Shomer Pikadam, remember your Shomer Sachar is Chayim in Gnei Veda and certainly Pshia. So not Alts alone do you have to pay it back, but Alts being a Shomer you have to pay it back, like any other Pikadam. If you can't prove that you weren't negligent, then you have to pay it back. Okay?
So this is to ensure the return of the
this
half.
This is to ensure the
that's
return.
That's an investment.
Right, because the half that's a loan, I'm entitled to anyway. Right? So that is basically how a common heter iska works.
Is it half-half, usually?
Yes.
Or are you just giving an example?
It's usually half. No, it's usually half-half.
Why
he does bring down that... why is it half-half and not the whole one? There are advantages
except for the
both.
Percent, interest I want to make.
Well, first of all, you're protecting more of your money by calling it half of it a loan. Because let's say he does bring two witnesses. If he brings two witnesses that he wasn't negligent, you're out.
And that's more or less likely to happen than the shvua risk.
It doesn't matter. When it's a loan, there's nothing that can make you out. The loan part, you get back either way. See, the idea is to give the lender enough confidence to do this as if it were a loan. In today's economy, we're sort of not used to this because even a loan is a risk at this point. You know, there's bankruptcy and all kinds of stuff like that. In those days, you know, when you had debtor prison and stuff like that, people paid back loans if they had any way of doing it. Or they burned your house down, one or the other.
In Klal Yisrael, we had any recourse in this?
What?
What recourse did we talk about in Klal Yisrael?
What do you mean? Al Dinei Yisrael?
Yeah.
No. You don't have recourse. If the guy doesn't have money, you can't get paid back.
So you'd always had this risk of not being paid back. Yes. The loan was always a transfer.
If the loan came due and he had no money to pay you back, I mean, the loan stays there until Shemitah. Once Shemitah comes, as long as loan's due, that's it. You know, if you're in Eretz Yisrael. Kutz Laretz is Machlokas. Okay? But Puzbol, I think, only works when Shemitah's the Rabbah.
Oh, yeah?
I think so. What?
Was it instituted during Bayis Sheni?
Yeah, Bayis Sheni was the Rabbah, because you didn't have Rav Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. It's nothing to do with the Beis Hamikdash Shemitah. It has to do with, I think, according to Moshe, it has to do with whether Rav Yoshua allowed. That is the basic heteresco. It is used in many more situations than that, which is where you get into very great areas. It becomes questionable whether you can use heteresco, which is very commonly done, for example, when you're going to take the money and you're not going to invest it. Because that's not an iska. The heter iska is based on the premise you're going to invest the money for me. And so you're not really doing this transaction. So if I have a heter iska and I'm using the money for the wrong thing, then it's like a joke. And so it becomes very questionable if the heter iska works. Many people are samech on it, more not out of choice, because like I said, the economy is just based on credit and not free credit. So that's one area where it's not so poshut.
The person holds it's bidi eved to rely on the heter?
What? If it's the real situation where you're talking about an iska and it's being invested in, although I still have my fears and trepidation only because it's 500 years old, he especially says there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, and you should do it, because if you don't do it, you're preventing a chesed from somebody who needs the money. But there are many situations, like, most situations. What?
I once heard that's an example of harama, and it's a negative. It's a partially negative.
Yes, there is a harama aspect, and it depends on the kind of heteriska. That will depend really on how realistic or not realistic the conditions are. For example, he says, if the conditions you impose in the heteriska to have the borrower not pay back are impossible to attain, it doesn't work. It has to be something that's realistic.
Then the relevance of how good the heteriska...
He gives an example. Let's say there is a shita that says, not only can you say you need two kosher edim, you can actually name the two edim. And they could be living in China.
And they have to see.
That's
you.
A shita. He says that's not acceptable because it's almost impossible to occur. It has to be from a business perspective realistic to a point where a normal businessman would enter into a deal like this.
So within which banks you use?
What? Well, we didn't get the banks. Banks.
I want to get Ellie a little nervous.
I was already nervous once I saw the email.
Banks is another problem. The banks is a problem because the vast majority of the customers, and probably all of the banks, have no idea what the heteriska is about. Maybe Ellie does, but I guarantee you the owner of Poggi does not, and he probably doesn't even care.
So, but does it matter the hull of the bank, or who it's has the to owner, understand it's the stock, person who's...
It's the stockholders, you know, that are doing the lending.
Okay, so first of all, how does Halacha look at a corporation?
So there are, not yet. So there are, so he brings down, I think, if it's Moshe, and I don't understand the reasoning, says that the heter iska klali in a bank, well, he says the reasoning, I'm not sure I agree with it, because it has to do with Metzias, not Halacha. that a heterisk of calling in a large bank will work even if the parties don't know about it, because al pistam, the borrower is agreeing to abide by the bylaws of the bank. And they never read the bylaws of the bank anyway. And so if this is in the bylaws, that everything is al pi heteriska, then it's just going to be a intrinsically accepted condition. Now, that may be true with small private loans. It is certainly not true with commercial loans in the United States, at least. When there's a commercial loan, my attorney is going to read the note before I sign it. I'm not going to rely on some bylaws in the bank. I want to know every term that's in there. In fact, somebody might give me the note to look at and tell him what to do. that's in the bigger loan. So I don't know that the premise is any longer correct. In other words, the mitziyistic premise. That's just my personal worthless opinion.
Overdraft, borrow from the bank.
What?
Overdraft. People that go overdraft, they borrow from the bank.
Right. So overdraft is the problem of being a personal expense. But,
a personal expense.
Right.
It's not a business. Not investing it.
What?
So heterisk shouldn't apply that. You're not investing the money. Bank.
Correct. It shouldn't.
Yeah.
But there are those that say it does.
Okay.
For personal expenses.
Yeah, okay.
There are those that say, I mean, all of these are like later achronim. I mean, the whole thing started in the 1500s, so you can't really have rishon. So it there are those that say that. Now, the other problem, which is also very present in the banks, is that they usually make you sign a note that says you're going to pay ribis X percent per annum, and if you don't, you have to pay. In other words, they make you sign a note that's in contravention to the heteris. Okay, so this is problematic. It's another questionable transaction. So, what is recommended to do in that situation to try to get the least of evils you can is you either put a notation on the note that you're signing itself that this is kafuf to the heteriska, that is subjugated to the terms of the heteriska, or you like put an addendum on that says the heteriska is overriding. Now, where that actually, what?
They let you?
Whenever I sign, it's very funny because whenever I sign in the bank, I always, above my name, I sign Chatum Al Pi Hetereska. Now, when I first came to Eretz Yisrael, it was very interesting. I took out a mortgage to buy my apartment, and I'm sitting there. I had a dollar mortgage that I took out before I came, because we bought the apartment before we came, and I had my attorney write on there Kofuf Al Pi Hetereska. And then when I came to take out the, what's it called, Mashkanta Zakarut? Yeah. So I had to sign in the Israeli bank, in Israel. And I asked them if I can put their Chatum Al Pi Hetereska. So the lady who I'm doing this stuff with didn't really know. She asked someone else. Finally, the manager comes over with a pre-inked stamp. Chatum Al Pi Hetereska. So, some of them know. It was interesting. Well, let me not.
If you put your post-it hat on for a second, does that mean we should go back to our bank if we didn't do that? And because every time we're dipping into overdraft.
Hello? I am in the middle of giving a chabura. Can I call you back? Okay. Yeah.
Now, I'm saying, I don't think I did, and I don't remember doing that when I took out all the loans in my bank and whatever. Do we need to go back?
This is a question you have to ask a post-it.
But it makes sense.
I can't tell you. I mean, you already were Kotein, so to write it now, I don't know. He does discuss here, forget about that case, he discusses here, what if Yutaka entered into a forbidden transaction? What do you do now? And he does give advice on how to handle that, and go back and sort of recast it. But you have to have the cooperation of the lender in order to do that. And I don't know how much the Israeli lenders can cooperate in that regard. But the point is there are many issues. It's not poshut that the way we do things
is the right way.
Now you may say, what did I come to Israel for, and I have to deal with this issaribis. It's not so poshut in the United States either, because you're assuming that it's just given that I can borrow and lend with a goyish bank. The problem is every goyish bank, with perhaps the exception of a mom and pop joint in the middle of the Midwest, has Jewish shareholders. And what do you do with the Jewish shareholders? So this machlokes haposkim, also achronim. There are those that say that the Jewish shareholders are bottled to a degree. If there are officers in the bank and significant shareholders, it might be more problematic. But the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is very emphatic that one Jewish shareholder will make it an usur, period. According to Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you cannot have any ridus dealings with a bank that has even one Jewish shareholder, which is, means just about any bank in the world. Now, even without that, you may not even realize that what you think are Goyish banks are actually Jewish banks. U.S. Bank and City National in Los Angeles were both started by Jews. And so if you were in the beginning, you had real ribbis issues there. So it's not so posh, at least here you have some kind of heteriska. There you got nothing. You know? So it's not like you're playing it safe on either side. What were you going to say?
According to the posting, let's say it goes by that does it help to at least try to get some Goyish shareholders?
Well, you'd have to have at least a majority. At least. And I don't know if the majority, simple majority, works. I never really went through the Shita about the Goyish banks.
And you have to do research into it to determine these.
Well,
things?
Let's put it like this: if you don't do the research, and
you
find
say
out,
chazaka, America has many
well,
going.
Okay. Well, let's say you put yourself on a chazaka, and then in the middle of your loan, you find out it's a Jewish bank. You're up a creek without a paddle.
Because
you can't make any more payments.
And then they'll be upset.
it becomes very problematic.
You can't see the sprayer that if it's a bank of the U.S. where you have Goyish borrowers and Goyish shareholders,
yeah.
But the money to the profits from the Jewish shareholders come from the.
I don't think so. I haven't seen that. Some people say that by where it's a role of Goyim, that it's attributed to the Goyim, but I don't think you could say that. I never really understood the Shita that says Goyim are okay. I mean, you know, where it's a role of Goyim.
Yeah.
Because people don't go by Rav, you know, and Adam is always Rav HaKavua, it's always Mechza Mechza. Yeah.
Even when you say Rav Goyim, you mean Rav Goyim as the number of shareholders?
Yes.
Or the percentage?
Yes, no, the ownership.
So
the
you
ownership
can have
of the
one
bank.
Jew that owns 95% of it, but there's two of those.
That's Rav Jews. It's the percentage of shares that counts, the percentage of ownership that counts. Right? Now, corporations. So, if you remember, we said the way a heter iska works is it turns it from a loan into an investment. And the difference is who bears the risk of loss. So, I asked Irv Scheinberg many years ago about taking interest from a corporation, and apparently Rav Moshe has a sheet, he told me that I think it's the Maram Shik that says it's mutter. Because when you're dealing with a corporation as the corporation is borrowing money from you, who is bearing the risk of loss? If the corporation takes my money and loses it, who's out? What? Let's say a lender. I loan money to a corporation. I'm the one who loses out.
Right.
If the president and the shareholders have $1 million in the bank, they don't have to pay me. Right? So I may be calling it a loan, but in fact, it's an investment. So therefore, if the corporation is borrowing money from me, they're not really borrowing money from me. And that's why they're allowed to pay me what will otherwise be called ribis. It does not work in the other direction, though. If I borrow money from the corporation, then I am not allowed to pay them back, because in that case, if I lose the money, I'm out, and so I am a borrower, and it is a loan, and I have to pay back the corporation. There is a situation where even with the corporation, it will not work, because you might say, okay, I have a great, now not everybody holds the corporations. I personally think it actually makes a lot of sense because it's very similar to tax concepts in the way we allocate partnership liabilities, depending on who's taking the risk of loss. But you might be tempted to say, you know, I'll just incorporate myself, I'll go into any bank I want to, and I'll borrow money. Well, if you try to do that, and they actually agree to lend you the money, they're going to make you sign a personal guarantee. And when you sign that personal guarantee, the whole investment thing is out the window, because then if my corporation loses the money, I'm the one that's out, not the lender. So now it's again a loan. So really it's only going to work for corporations where nobody has to give a personal guarantee on the loan. Okay, we're getting late here, so I'm going to just end off with one thing, and that's really the crux of this. Anytime you enter into a contract of almost any sort in this country, you must read it to make sure there is no provision in there for ribis or what's called hatsmada, which is really just another form of ribis. Hatsmada means the principal is linked to, used to be linked to the dollar. Not anymore, because they lost money doing that. Now it's linked to inflation, which means I borrow $100 from the bank, even if they charge me 0% interest, it's linked, and so after 1 year of 3% inflation, I have to pay them back $103. So that's mamash ribis. So
even though in economic terms, it's the same.
Doesn't matter.
The money was just.
But it's still, that's the difference between money and commodity. Ribis is on money. When I give you back more money than I borrow, it has to be money, and it has to be local currency. There is, the Moshe talks about dollars being used in Eretz Yisrael. And he says, or Yosha says the same thing, that in Eretz Yisrael, dollars is considered the local currency. But that was written in the 70s, and I'm not so sure that's true anymore. Because I remember in the early 80s, I could walk into a makolot, give them dollars, and give them back change in lira or shekel, whatever it was then. It was local currency, and they actually preferred it then. Now and everything was priced in dollars. You know, now ever since the collapse, that almost completely stopped. So I'm not sure that halakha still applies. But it is very, very common for almost all contracts, especially if you're buying an apartment, I guarantee you there's ribis, deraisa, and hatsmada in there. And many, you can't assume it has a heterisk attached to it. You have to read it and either verify that there's a heterisk attached to it or deal with it somehow, because if there is ribis in the contract, even if you're not going to
incur it,
according to many poskim, it's issur deraisa to even sign the contract. I remember when I went to Cellcom, I read the contract, and I saw there's a clause in there, if your payments are late, you have to pay ribis. And the guy printed me out a heterisca that Cellcom has. He wasn't even from Guy. Okay, I tried to do that with Pelophone. I couldn't even find someone in Pelophone who knows what heterisca is. So I don't know what to do with that case.
And that's what caused you to go to the Cellcom?
What?
That's what caused you to go to Cellcom?
No, Cellcom I went to first. Now, I have since discovered that all the cellular companies are complete ganavim, so it doesn't really matter if you go to this one or that one. It doesn't really matter. Okay? Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Any questions? Yes?
So once it's, let's say you enter a contract with a cell phone company,
yeah,
and you realize it's really steroids, so now can you go back?
Well, you
don't pay your payments.
Well, the question is, you make your payments time. That's why almost everything in this country I have on Horat Keva. So I'm not going to get into that ribis problem.
Okay. But suppose someone's in a situation where they can't make a payment.
So now
can they go back and sign at the risk, or it's useless?
Well, first of all, there's no way the cell phone company is going to sign at the risk of waiting.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen. Not going
to
happen.
Don't pay. Let them take you to court.
He said cell phone had one.
They had one already. The company, I didn't sign it. That's a standard, that's a heterisk call they had. They just printed me out a copy. Okay, so that was actually gratifying to know that they even understood that there had to be an heteriska.
So it's there automatically?
That
specific,
yes,
company.
For that specific company. And that was then. This is talking about 6 years ago. I don't know what it is now. So, What you do after the fact, that you have to ask. There's all kinds of different heterim that people come up with. Whether they're good or not, I can't tell you. But, you know, living amongst Jews like this, you often find yourself in a place you don't have much of a choice. You missed a Arnona payment, then all of a sudden you get a bill of Rivas on it.
Let's say they're not going to pay it.
Rivas is just going to get more, and they'll go to the bank and pay more.
Does
Iriyasu Chemish have a heteristia?
I don't think so. I don't know.
If they would sue you, you know, I don't have to pay my interest. I'm not looking to pay interest anyway. I'm more happy not to. But let's say they now pursue you, and then the courts give orders. You have to pay them X amount of money. Is that considered a court payment, or is that considered an interest payment to the guy? In other words, let's say Lamaisa comes down to a fight for that interest. I'll pay you principal, but I'm not going to pay you the interest. And they say, okay, we're going to take you to court for the interest.
Right.
So the court then demand that I pay him that money. Now, is that an interest payment, or is that a government
expenses
fee or something?
No, it's an interest payment. I mean, what will happen if you don't pay it is the court will give them a letter, an order to take to the bank and take the money out against your will.
So why is that me giving interest? They're just stealing from me.
If they go to the bank and do that, you're right. But if you write them a check,
So the answer in this kind of situation would be let them do whatever legal recourse they have.
Yeah.
Let go with play.
However,
play
you
out.
Will discover this is a very expensive answer because by the time they get to the bank to do this, they've incurred all kinds of costs that they're going to take away from you.
This is their answer.
Well, that's the question. Is it, it's very.
It's right.
No, is it really? I mean, if it's this is the right, you're right.
And the point is, there is a way out. It's my question.
They're all questionable.
Right.
They're all questionable, but you know, it's a question. So it'll work. Most of the heteriscas that are employed are going to be questionable because they're in situations that are not for business. And most of the time, you do have business arrangements. You don't really need the heteriscal because they're not that kind of arrangement. Okay. Thank you very much.